Hello again, and welcome to Sonnet 73, where we discuss elder law issues of the day and special needs matters. I'm David Slonim, host of this podcast and owner of Slonim Law, a law firm based in Melbourne, Florida, focusing on the very same matters we're discussing today. Today, you're going to hear a great interview that I had with Josh Jensen, the president and CEO of Aging Matters in Brevard, which is based in Cocoa, Florida. Aging Matters is the designated lead agency for Brevard County, providing and coordinating home and community-based services to nearly 6,000 people over the age of 60 in 2020 alone. Before joining Aging Matters as the CEO in February 2018, he was also the CEO of a full continuum of care not-for-profit senior campus in Minnesota for over 12 years. Josh has a degree in healthcare administration from the University of South Dakota and received his health service executive designation in 2017.
Welcome back, listeners, to Sonnet 73. This is David Slonim, and I'm here today talking with Josh Jensen, who is the CEO of Aging Matters in Brevard. Hey, Josh.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Happy to have you here. So, as we talked about before, you are just the third CEO of Aging Matters, right?
Yep. Aging Matters has been in existence since 1965, and yes, I'm the third CEO in the company's history, which is kind of an honor for me.
Okay. And how long have you been here with us?
Almost 4 years. It'll be 4 years in February that will be my time here at Aging Matters. So it's flown by.
Okay. And I think you're a Midwestern background, is that right?
I spent most of my life in the Midwest, okay. Upper Midwest. I spent the last 20 years in Minnesota prior to moving down here to sunny Florida.
Oh, okay. So you miss the snow, I bet.
Oh, yes. One of the happiest moments of my life was when I sold my snowblower.
Right. I bet. So let's talk about Aging Matters a little bit. Aging Matters, as you said, has been here for decades, mm-hmm. And is a real resource in Brevard County.
Right.
And, you know, it has some of the major resources that it provides. I'm sure everybody knows the Meals on Wheels, which
yes.
is what you do there. And then you also provide some other things there. So let's share some information about what Aging Matters does.
So just from the high level and then to drill down, each county in Florida is assigned a lead agency to provide and or coordinate services for seniors.
Okay.
And in Brevard, it's Aging Matters. So we, we provide, you know, obviously you mentioned Meals on Wheels. That is by far our largest program and the most well-known, but what people don't know in my elevator speech is we either provide or coordinate anything and everything you can think of to keep a senior independent and in their own homes. And that goes from home health to in-house respite to senior transportation, home modifications, legal aid. We work with legal aid to if somebody needs help on different things and just all the gamut of what you can think of, medical supplies.
Yeah.
We have a resource center for caregivers in Merritt Island that provides not only classes and things, but we also have a medical supply bank there.
Is it the Sunflower House
there? That is the Sunflower House in the Merritt Square Mall.
Right. Know that well.
So mm-hmm. we have wheelchairs and walkers and incontinence products and a lot of different things that are donated to us that we in turn distribute back out to the community just to help those seniors.
So if seniors need those products and materials, is there a cost for those? Or they just
it's
kind of show
all
up?
All donation-based.
Okay. So whatever they can afford, mm-hmm. basically they'll pay, and if they can't afford anything, then
correct.
They're given those products and
correct.
Materials.
A lot of our products are donated to us.
Mm-hmm.
So mom passes away. The family lives up north. They don't know what to do with the wheelchair or the walker or those different things.
Right.
And a lot of times they just give them to us because they don't know what else to do with it.
Right.
And then we redistribute it out to the community.
Right. Okay. Well, how many people do you generally serve in a given year?
Well, we served in 2020 over 6,000 clients on a with one service or another. Mm-hmm. And that may be continual, you know, like daily home health,
right.
Or that also might be a one time we went in and installed grab bars in a shower or built a wheelchair ramp for them.
Right.
So those are counted in there too. But overall, right. About 6,000 people. We average through all of our programs about 2,000 clients a day.
Wow. Okay. So 2,000 clients a day?
When you look at Meals on Wheels alone, it's 1,000.
Oh, wow. I see. Okay. All right.
And then our senior at lunch program and then our home health and the other services. Yeah,
right.
It adds up in a hurry when you start to put it all together.
Right. So how do you do Meals on Wheels? How does that program actually work? You have 1,000 people that you feed every day.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that food come from and who serves it?
So we have a commercial kitchen located right on the Cocoa Rockledge border off of US 1. And from there, we have distribution trucks that go all over the county to different pickup sites. And we have one central that goes out from Cocoa, it goes out beachside through Merritt Island. We have one that heads north,
mm-hmm.
ultimately goes through Port St. John, Titusville, ends up in Mims.
Wow.
And in that southern direction, we start driving down US 1, and we have a spot in US 1 just south of O'Galley. And then we have a stop in Palm Bay, and then all the way down to Mico. We have distribution points where the volunteers come, pick up the meals, and then distribute it to our client lists.
You know, one thing I've heard about Meals on Wheels, which is really sad and impressive at the same time, is that sometimes those Meals on Wheels are the only contact point that mm-hmm. some seniors have all day long with anybody else.
That is,
and it's really remarkable that, you know, you're able to provide that kind of service there and safety and support. It, you know, it's not just meals in that way.
Exactly.
Right?
Our tagline right now is "It's more than a meal."
Mm-hmm.
And actually, in October, we've been doing an awareness campaign and speaking with law enforcement throughout the county about how that wellness check is so important in addition to the meal to make sure that person is safe.
Right.
And we actually have documented examples about how that wellness check has actually saved lives.
Right. Like what?
Well, we have a chief of police whose mother-in-law literally life was saved because of a wellness check.
No kidding.
The volunteer knew that client well enough that could tell something was off and made a call to our office. We called, you know, we went through our process. He went and took her to the doctor, and she coded in the ER. So if she would have been at home, she would have died.
Wow.
And that's just one example of many.
That's a close call.
But,
yeah.
But that's why the more than a meal tagline is so important to us and why we're bringing awareness to it, because it's really important.
Right.
And when you go on a Meals on Wheels route, you can truly see in their eyes, you know, how happy they are to see somebody.
Right.
So it's a very meaningful experience. We actually have companies that will pay to do a Saturday meal route, because typically we only deliver meals Monday through Friday because of our funding. They will do select a route to as a team building exercise for their staff, because it is such a meaningful experience.
Oh, I see. That's interesting there. So companies will volunteer to do that and ride along, I guess, with the volunteers?
No, they'll do it themselves.
The ride. Okay.
They will meet at one of our pickup locations.
Right.
Typically, it's either Cocoa or Melbourne, because they're the most central. And we give them training on how to, you know, what to do and what to do if somebody doesn't answer the door, and we give those instructions. And then we turn them loose, and they see it as a team building experience.
Interesting, huh? So let's talk about your funding for a bit. How does Aging Matters get funding, and you know, what's the situation that you've seen in that over the last few years that you've been around?
That's been interesting. And actually, I read an article this morning. Even though Congress gets stalled all the time, there's generally bipartisan support to support the Older Americans Act, which is our primary federal funding.
I see. So you get federal, then state, and some other local funding as well?
About 60% of our income is federal and state.
I see.
From the federal level, it's the Older Americans Act. And the state level, it's community care for the elderly and home care for the elderly.
Okay.
And that's about 60%. We also get funding from several cities. And the county gives us money to support meals. And then it's donations and fundraisers and
right.
different things, because we're a 501c3. And why that's important is we are required to raise 10% of our revenue locally as a match in order to receive our full federal and state funding.
Oh, I see. So you're on the road a lot and kind of trying to get that coming in.
Right. Huh? So the United Way is a big partner. The cities, the counties, that all goes towards that match.
I see.
So again, we have about a little over $7 million budget, and we have to raise 10% of that locally in order to receive our full funding.
That's pretty significant. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I can't imagine that the need for services is going to go down anytime soon. Brevard is actually one of the largest senior counties in all of Florida, is it not?
It is.
Yeah.
And the 10-year forecast is 40% of Brevard will be over the age of 60 in 10 years.
40%. Wow. Okay.
So, and you mentioned I'm from the Midwest. When the recruiters were talking me into coming down here, that was one factor that really intrigued me about the opportunities that Brevard has to keep seniors in their own
Well, that's an important thing, right?
It's, I tell the story, I spent the last 12 years as the CEO of a senior campus with nursing home, assisted living, but they also had home health, meals on wheels.
Right.
And my my marketing team for the nursing home and the assisted living were always trying to, you know, build occupancy, and the home health team were trying to keep people out, and they were always fighting.
Right.
So when this opportunity came up, it just, it spoke to me, you know, because I was sick of that infighting, and I personally believe people are much better and happier in their own homes versus going to one of those other settings. Not that they're bad, they do have their place, but if at all possible, keeping people in their own homes is what I want to do.
In the 16 years that I've had my own practice, and even time before, I can't recall any client who said, I don't want to be at home, I want to be in a skilled facility or nursing home. No, everybody wants to stay at home if possible.
I know of one.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I met one. I've been doing this for over 20 years. I know one that was just excited to come to the nursing home. That's the only one.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's going to be those, right? You know, so, yeah. But, you know, that's interesting. You mentioned the CCE, which is a community care for the elderly. Mm-hmm. And basically that is part of your federal funding, right? State and federal funding. Yep. And that is essentially a Medicaid program.
Yes.
Right. And so, of course, Medicaid is a state and federally funded program. So, you know, I do a fair amount of Medicaid work with clients as well to ensure that they're able to meet the threshold criteria for Medicaid. And so I can understand how, you know, that is going to be a continued challenge for seniors to be within that program, and there's a real need for that.
There is, and as the need for Medicaid grows, the state is getting more and more strict when they're doing the lookbacks on assets and things like that.
They've tightened those rules a little bit there.
Because, I mean, it's exploding.
Mm-hmm.
So they really want to make sure nobody's kind of gaming the system to get in there. So for what you're doing to get people prepared is very important.
Right. Yeah. We see that, you know, people make those applications themselves, and oftentimes they're going to get that kickback.
Right.
Certainly the first time round, unless they have some professional support there. So it's important for them to be able to do that there. And then once people get the CCE, the Community Care for the Elderly approval, then they're able to utilize some more of your services.
They are. They have to go through a screening process, and they're scored. One being the most independent, five being, you know, the most needy, I guess.
And that scoring is actually the Senior Resource Alliance providing that scoring through an interview process.
Correct.
I work with clients to assist with that scoring
And one thing we see that I really encourage people to be honest, because when they're doing that interview, they're like, "Oh no, I'm, you know, I
don't be Superman, right?
I don't need that. Right. I don't need that." But then that scores them lower, and that puts them further down the waiting list, because there is actually a waiting list in this county for
Right.
As of, I think, 2 weeks ago, it was over 1,100 people that are on the CCE waiting list in this county.
And that waiting list is the same for the Medicaid waiver waiting list, essentially. And that's, that waiting list is not based on first come, first serve. As you were saying, it's based on need and, you know, medically as well as some financial. And one thing that is on that interview questionnaire that the SRA interviewer normally asks is, you know, what your needs are as caregiver, you know, whether or not mm-hmm. you're kind of burnt out, essentially.
Right.
And there's so many caregivers that are doing it, and they're just fighting so hard to be that superhero.
Right.
And they don't want to admit to themselves that they're getting mm-hmm. burnt out. And that can be a real traumatic experience when something happens to them, and of course the person they're taken care of
right.
also then can't get taken care of. So it's really important for people to understand, just like you said, be honest mm-hmm. with themselves as well as, you know,
absolutely.
asking for help if needed.
And for the caregivers, they need that too. I have personal experience in my family with my grandmother utilizing adult day and respite services. It added years to her life when she was able to not have to keep one eye on Grandpa 24/7.
Right. She could be Grandma.
Yeah.
She could be his wife.
She could
right?
go out and, you know, yeah. do some shopping and do different right. things and have, you know, feel that she was being taken care of, so she didn't have to worry about that, at least for a few hours. And
let's talk about your respite service. So that's mm-hmm. part of the CCE program, right?
And so there's a CCE and there's a federal piece to it. We don't want to get into the minutia what separates them, but
right.
yes.
So the respite is something that Aging Matters provides, and they basically has a volunteer who comes in and spends a few hours in the home while the care provider or caregiver can go out and get their hair done, get groceries, or, you know,
sometimes,
do some self-care there, right?
Sometimes volunteer. Most of the time, it's a background-checked employee, because uh-huh. we make sure that person is trustworthy and
okay.
safe to be alone with that person. But yes, they yeah. will go into the home and just, you know, play games or spend time with that person, so mm-hmm. the caregiver can go out and do those things to have some escape for at least
yeah.
for a little bit.
Right, or just other things that need to get done, take
right.
the car for maintenance or
mm-hmm.
or whatever is necessary. And in fact, you're talking about the background check there, and you don't specifically have all these employees under Aging Matters directly. You coordinate with other agencies and companies in town to provide
yes.
some of that as well.
As our status as the lead agency for Brevard, that's one of our basically duties, is to work with these other providers and then ensure that they are doing the proper background checks and the proper things
mm-hmm.
for them to receive CCE services.
Right.
So we have around 30 subcontractors of different kinds throughout the county. Some of them are adult daycare, some of them are home health agencies. Again, Legal Aid from Brevard, they're MediAlert, the Pendants, mm-hmm. have contracts with them,
mm-hmm.
and just anything you can think of to keep people safe. It's very important to make sure that the people that are going into these homes are trustworthy and safe, which is why we do the background checks. And we also do background checks on volunteers
right.
as well, because
right.
like Meals on Wheels, they're going into people's homes.
Right, right.
So yeah. We want to make sure that there's no danger, so we run background checks on all of our people, which we have, you know, over 100 employees. We have about 800 volunteers, and then you look at the subcontractors. I mean, we're doing background checks on a lot of people just to ensure safety.
Oh, sounds like a full-time job on
well,
its own
yeah,
there.
Right.
Yeah. Do you contract that out to somebody else doing all that, or is that something that you have a person in-house?
We have a person in-house that does it. Just a couple
oh.
people, actually.
Okay.
One that does volunteers, one that does employees.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So what's your favorite part of the job?
The variety of it, and just knowing that we're keeping people safe. Again, back to my story about the fighting about institutional settings.
Mm-hmm.
In my personal opinion, I'm on the right side of it now, keeping people at home and independent.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent a lot of time assisting with my grandparents when my grandpa started coming down with pretty serious dementia, and we were able to, through different services, actually similar agency to Aging Matters, but, you know, up north, we were able to keep my grandpa out for quite a while until
mm.
just physically he couldn't.
Yeah, the quality of life is so different, it's so much better.
Absolutely.
You know, of course, yeah, as long as you can stay at home and age in place.
Mm-hmm. And do it safely.
And do it, of course, right.
That's
right.
Where all of the different services, they all come together, you know, between the home modifications, respite, home health, all those things can work together to make sure that person stays. can stay safe and healthy at home.
Right, right, yeah. I think that's really vital for people to be able to do that. And then when they stay at home, they need to get out, right?
Correct.
So you know, what services are available through Aging Matters to transport an individual who may not be able to drive anymore, which, of course, we live in Florida, so if you don't drive, it's practically a death sentence.
Right.
So, you know, how do they get around? Is that something that you also help with?
We have a volunteer-based senior transportation program. Two of them, actually. We have Senior TransServe, which, you know, will drive somebody to the hair appointment or to that clinic appointment or even to the pharmacy, different things. And then we also have a Vets Driving Vets program where we have retired veterans taking other retired veterans to VA appointments and different things. But that we found that camaraderie between two vets really makes that client feel more comfortable getting in that car and going to different places where they have something to talk about.
Right.
And it's a really incredible program.
Yeah. So where do you see that program going in the future?
It's we're hoping to grow it.
Mm-hmm.
COVID really kind of took a hit because people weren't comfortable putting other people into their cars.
Sure, yeah.
It's starting to come back now as the vaccinations are done, and but we're hoping to continue to grow that. It's vital service to keep that normalcy in people's lives with their routines and different things. And
how did COVID affect you otherwise?
At first, we weren't sure what was going to happen, whether we were going to lose, because if we lost our volunteer-based Meals on Wheels, was going to be in a really bad spot. And people stepped up. And as you know, if you recall, at first, the PPE shortage was really bad. So we were fighting tooth and nail to get what we could out to our volunteers so they could continue to drive. Mm. As that settled down, we got a steady stream of things coming in with gloves and masks and face shields and different things just to protect the volunteers and our staff when they need to go into homes. There's still a little bit of hesitancy sometimes to have people from the outside coming in. We're seeing that ease a little bit, but there is still some of it where they cut off home care services and then they started struggling physically, mentally.
Right.
So we're starting to see that come back.
Yeah.
A funny story, it's actually a touching story. Summer of 2020, it was getting so hot and the volunteers were so sick of masks.
Right, yeah.
And we had to come up with new protocols to deliver. It's not allowing people to actually go into the home, but you have to set the meal, by the door, back up 6 feet, make sure that they come get the meal and do that wellness check that we talked about.
Right.
We bought 1,000 face shields.
Okay.
Clear face shields.
Sure, yeah.
And one story that got back to me was one of the clients started crying because she hadn't seen a smile for so long because of the masks.
Right.
So, I mean, those little things like that are another reason why I love this job.
With the masks, it is really hard to tell what's going on behind the mask there. And you have to learn I heard a phrase, smile with your eyes, right? And we're all looking forward to a time when we don't have to worry about smiling with our eyes as much anymore. And especially as we talked about before with the seniors, this may be their only interaction with another human being the entire day or otherwise.
In many cases it is. I've been on Meals on Wheels routes with different people, and you'll have clients that are actually mad that you're leaving because they want to sit and visit, and you have to get to that next stop.
Right. Yeah.
So that's a hard part about the job, but you got to do it.
Right. Yeah, with over 1,000 people a day, that's a lot of people you're trying to feed there. And that's a really important program, of course.
Well, and linked to Meals on Wheels is our Senior at Lunch program, where we're finally getting our dining sites open. We have 11 dining sites in between MIMS and MECO.
So what does a dining site mean?
So it's congregate dining. So okay. Meals on Wheels, in order to be eligible for that, you have to be what's considered homebound, not able to leave the house on your own. And Seniors at Lunch is funded under the same program, but it's people that are independent enough to either by public transportation or their own cars get to a dining site and have lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's they visit, you know, they enjoy the visits with each other. They play games. They do bingo. We bring in speakers to do education on different things. And it's a really nice program that unfortunately had been shut down for quite a while during the pandemic.
Right. So now with COVID, you're able to kind of restart some of those programs for the county.
With the vaccination coming back, you know, rates up, the people right. wanting to get out more, we've been reopening the sites and inviting people to come in to come back to it, and they're excited to see their friends.
So you had about a dozen sites out there before.
We have 11 sites. They are from literally there's one in Mims, one in Meeko, and then nine in between.
Okay.
From Palm Bay, Melbourne. Again, they're spaced all through the county because the county being 72 miles north to.
It's a long county.
North to south.
Right. Right.
Yeah, so we go, it's Mims, Titusville, Rockledge, Melbourne. We have a few in, we have a couple in Cocoa, a couple in Melbourne, and then again, Palm Bay and in Meeko.
And so the same meals that are served, Meals on Wheels, is just kind of in a
same meals, but
situation?
There's, instead of being individually packaged like we do Meals on Wheels, we do bulk servings at the...
Like a buffet
yeah,
kind
basically.
Of thing? Okay, yeah, that's
basically.
Nice. Yeah, and how many people do you, have you typically had at that pre-COVID?
Pre-COVID, you were looking at 400 or 500 throughout the county.
Is that per day?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So you do 400 or 500 people that you serve per day with that, and then another 1,000 or so?
Correct.
In the Meals and Wheels individual servings?
In addition to that, we also provide lunches for several of the adult daycares and child daycares.
Child as well. Interesting.
And we also have a catering program. We have a professional chef on staff.
Okay. Wow. So what kind of meals actually come out of Meals on Wheels then?
It's anything you can think of. I mean, it's chicken. We have very strict dietary and nutrition requirements from the state and the federal government. So we're very careful to make sure that all of that is met.
Okay.
So, and it can be... You know, it can be a hamburger, but we have to have X amount of vegetables, and we have to mix and match everything to make sure that the nutrition count is correct.
Does ketchup count as a vegetable?
I'm not sure.
Okay. All right. So you have a number of different programs Aging Matters does. You work with a lot of people in the community. Mm-hmm. Where do you see Aging Matters going past 2021? With a $7 million budget,
As we come out of the pandemic, I think there's going to be a change in thinking when it comes to, again, the institutional settings, wanting to keep people in their own homes. And it's not, and I say that because it's not just a ethical issue to me, it's also financial. Because we can keep somebody, through a variety of services, we can keep somebody in their own home safe and healthy for $800 to $1,000 a month, depending, or even less, depending on what they need.
Right.
When you're looking at nursing home stay, it's $10,000 a month.
Absolutely, yep.
So if we can do that for pennies on the dollar, they're going to be happier. It just makes sense.
Right, yeah. So, you know, that's, again, part of the whole Medicaid coverage that you're seeing that. And the Medicaid waiver program, which is the full name is the Home and Community-Based Services Waiver Program.
Yes.
And also the CCE, which is the Community Care for the Elderly. I don't know why I missed that.
We get acronymed to death in this business.
I bet. And so for Medicaid, you know, they do get, for either of those programs, you know, the state and federal government are going to pay anywhere between $1,100 and $1,300. And it doesn't get paid to the individual, but it gets paid to the care provider, meaning either the Aging Matters or for one of the other contracted providers that work with the state. And as you said, you know, that is oftentimes... enough to keep people in place at home, and they get to be healthier, they get to have their own surroundings, they get to eat more of, you know, what they want to eat, you know, watch whatever TV show they want to watch, and again, that keeps them, you know, around longer, and the families really appreciate that as well.
Yes, they can, as long as, again, we bring that safety into it to make sure that they're not just happy, but they're safe in their own in their own homes, and that's our goal.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the Medicaid program does have thresholds that are sometimes tough for people to meet because they often think that they've got to spend down all their assets, or they have income that's too high that they think is not going to be right to get on Medicaid. And that's something that we can assist with and talk to clients who we find some, you know, certainly legal and, you know, creative means to making sure that they are eligible, and that way their funds can last even longer and be kind of...
Well, nobody should assume that they don't qualify.
Right.
They need to go through the process. Right.
Oh, I can't tell you how many clients I've had to say, oh, do I need to get divorced from my spouse? Or how do I spend down all this money, or how do I give it away? Mm-hmm. That's all those things could be problematic if done incorrectly, done right, then and the application being done right as well, you know, then they're going to be more eligible for these matters sooner.
Correct.
And so getting that in place, working with you, working with attorneys like myself, then that's going to be important for them to do. Again, because that waiting list doesn't get shorter necessarily. It's a block grant program. And
correct.
So, you know, that money is put in at the beginning of the fiscal year, and then whatever is there is supposed to last for the whole year.
That's the challenge that we have, is we know we get this X amount of dollars at the beginning of the year, and we have to manage that waiting list versus providing that care, knowing that if we just go all out, we're going to run out of money and we won't get paid.
Yeah, it's a marathon, not a sprint, right?
Correct.
So that's something that people need to really understand how these programs work and what is going to be involved in managing the expectations there as well, I think, right? Yeah. And so I have personal opinions and wishes about, you know, what the state can do to expand those programs, but the state is not quite there yet, I think.
No, the governor's been supportive of the CECE program.
Mm-hmm.
But, there's always a but, not here as much, but other parts of the state, they did not spend their CCE allotment. So the governor's saying, well, you didn't spend it, you don't need an increase.
Uh-huh. Sure, like any budget, right?
But he's looking at the entire state, not like the individual regions. We could have used, we had to tap the brakes on everything last spring because we were going to go into the hole and overspend our contract. Uh-huh. But where we could have used another, you know, several hundred thousand and spent it easily and brought that waiting list down even further.
And again, that's just because Brevard is such a growing community for seniors.
Yeah. Community, and the need is there.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's one thing I do appreciate about Brevard being here as long as I have, is that there's a lot more services in Brevard County for seniors than many other counties in the state or any other parts or many other parts of the country.
Yes.
And so we're really for all other things being equal, Brevard is really lucky to have that in place.
Yeah, it's aerospace and seniors are the I like to joke with my family.
Yeah.
It was the two big drivers.
Yeah, certainly. The defense contractors have a big part there. And then, you know, people are coming in for those jobs, and they'll eventually retire. And, you know, that'll be part of that 40% growth then, right?
Yes.
So good. Aging Matters is also involved in, helping with other areas for seniors as far as the modifications go. I think we talked about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of modifications are in place for the house?
Well, we don't have contractors, so we're limited in what we can do. We can't do electrical. We can't do plumbing. We can't do things like that. But we do simple home repairs. And then with home modifications, we add grab bars. We do wheelchair ramps. We have a partnership with Brevard Fire and Rescue where they have smoke detectors, but no way to get them out to the people. So we take the smoke detectors, and when we're doing the home modifications, our guys check the smoke detectors, make sure they're working, and if they're not, then we replace them with new ones.
Mm-hmm.
But just the little things just to keep people say, you know, slight ramps when you're looking at different thresholds in your homes and things, just to make sure that the wheelchair or the walker can safely get up and down them.
Right.
Those types of things.
So when that smoke detector starts beeping, do people call you?
Not really. We're still trying to get the word about that. But if there's beeping while we're there, we will either change the battery or give them a new one.
Okay. I hate that beeping. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It always happens in the middle of the night.
Of course. And then you hopefully don't hit those smoke detectors with the end of a broom and
right.
knock the whole thing down, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah. So, you know, as we see more growth in Brevard, one of the issues that we also unfortunately see is the increase in potential homeless population as we have here. And I understand you're also working on some programs in that respect to limit that or to work on preventing that.
We have a pilot project that started in July through a national grant and with the city of Cocoa to work on senior homeless prevention. If they're homeless, we have them work with a different agency, but if they're in danger of becoming homeless, we have resources now that are available to help them work through that problem. And what we've seen throughout the county is, you know, grandma's been in this apartment for 10 years, grandpa passed away, and now she's seeing a 60% increase in rent. And she's on a fixed income, so what do I do?
Right.
So we're trying to pilot a project to try to navigate them through that. We have funds through the city of Cocoa for rental assistance. We have a counseling program that we can help kind of re-educate is the wrong word.
Financial counseling or what?
Financial counseling, but also mental counseling. If they're losing some of those normal life skills, we help work them through to try to get them back on kind of track, so to speak, if it comes to, because we've had specific examples of somebody just not knowing how to balance their checkbook anymore. And then they're overspending it, and you know, then if they're on a fixed income, and then the rent starts increasing, it starts snowballing on them.
Yeah.
So we have these counseling programs just to kind of give them goals weekly, just to kind of get their minds back on track.
So when you run across individuals that have some cognitive challenges with that, how do you address that? Do you check for advanced directives to see who to contact, or you know, how is that addressed?
We typically do that with our initial assessment to make sure all of that stuff is in place.
Okay, so you check for powers of attorney or healthcare surrogates
we ask the question.
Okay.
If they don't, we have, you know, partners like you guys do it, or Brevard Legal Aid. We refer to encourage them to get that done, because that is very important,
a piece of it.
But then we do periodic assessments of our clients just to see where they at. You know, we talked about that scale of 1 through 5. Okay, that person was a 3. We come back. Okay, is it still a 3? Is it a 4? Do we need to start planning on different things? And we have case managers throughout the county that do that with all of our clients.
Right. Okay. So that periodic assessment, that's an annual assessment that that you have with your
annual
clients?
Or something if there's an incident, something happened, it may be sooner.
Right.
Because that person may not be able to wait 12 months if there's a change in condition.
You know, what's in the news right now is all the rental assistance, right, for people because of COVID and things like that, mostly for working individuals and whatnot. Have you seen some of that? You mentioned that there was the city of Cocoa was doing some assistance with that.
Yep, we're working with them, targeting seniors in the city of Cocoa if they're seeing an increase in their rent or need rental assistance because of whatever reason.
Yeah.
We have XYZ qualifications that we have to go through with them, but then we do have a amount of money to help support them to at least for a few months until I can figure out something to, I mean, it's obviously not permanent, but support them for a few months while they find either alternative housing or figure out their living situation.
It's a good stopgap, but what happens if they can't? I
mean, that's why we're piloting this program, to try to figure out what the long-term end game is with this.
Right.
The ultimate goal would be to get them into more affordable housing, but that's a problem in its own right now.
Right.
Although we do see, apartments shooting up all over the county, but it doesn't help now. So we're trying to be that stopgap until we can get something more permanent for them.
Are you working with developers and other apartment complexes or whatnot?
Not directly, but we're working with the Housing Authority.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're kind of, especially when it comes to affordable housing, they've got their, they're all over that to make sure that it, because this county has a very large shortage of affordable housing.
Yeah, right.
And affordable apartments, subsidized apartments. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of them. That's why we're starting to see the problems that we're
right. That, and we're that problem is not going to get any better if we're seeing that growth in senior community and not mm-hmm. not an equal or larger growth, frankly, in the affordable housing, then you'll have that offset and imbalance for quite a long time.
Well, right, and there are other programs that, like the Housing Authority works directly with landlords, but many times they're not interested in it because they can make a lot more money selling market rent.
Uh-huh, sure, right.
Versus what the Housing Authority has from federal funds to help subsidize that they would rather, if they can get full market price for it, and right now there's no reason they can't.
Right.
So that's just making the problem bigger.
Right. Yeah. The seniors aren't going away. Their financial needs aren't going mm-hmm. away, and so that problem is just going to mushroom more than anything else, unless it's under
so many on a fixed income and they can't absorb a 30% increase in their in their rent. So sometimes we actually have examples that they're choosing between medications or rent, and that's not fair to anybody.
No. So do you take donations for that, or is that something that you're taking specifically as government funding for those projects?
Well, right now it's a combination of a private foundation and the government, the city of Cocoa, through mm-hmm. some of their emergency funding that they right. receive from the government.
Right.
Again, we have that 10% match, so we're always taking donations.
Right.
But right now, again, we're just a few months into it, trying to get our feet on the ground as to how this is going to look. But just in the couple months, we have seen that there is definite need for this service. So we're, our goal for this pilot project is to support 25 to 30 people in year one, with the goal of getting additional and continued funding to expand it countywide.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you expect continued funding years to come, or is this
We're on track, I would say, to meet the metrics that were the goals of the grant, so we're optimistic that we can expand this in the coming years.
Hmm. And so you're talking about grants, so are you doing all the grant writing yourself, or do you have other grant
writers? I have a great team that puts the grants together.
That's a lot of work to
do
that.
Yes. And especially the large national ones, you need somebody specialized in that, and we have a couple people that are very skilled in doing that.
Right. So overall, are you pretty happy with the choice to come down to Brevard and lead Aging mm-hmm. Matters? Yeah.
I have. We've been here as visitors, tourists and different things, and I've been coming down here on golf trips with buddies for a decade. So I knew the area as a tourist, but never as a resident. So that's been a fun experience.
Uh-huh.
I will say, just a quick little plug for Lead Brevard. I was encouraged to, register for that when I first got started here. And I lived in my previous county for 13 years. And here I'm coming up on 4, and I know much more about Brevard than I did about my previous county.
No kidding.
And just the lay of the land. And it's just to get to know the county and the community, it was just a fantastic thing for me that I think really made Brevard feel like home.
Okay. Yeah, so Lead Brevard helped you actually do that because they connected you with
the networking and the meetings. And it's just going through that class was, because we would meet at a different part of the county every month,
uh-huh.
and you just learn about different things you wouldn't normally even pay attention to.
Right.
And it was, it's really, like I said, it's really helped me make this feel like home in a hurry.
Well, I'm sure they'll appreciate the plug, but
I'm sure she will. Because I've lived in, I said most of my life was in the Midwest. I lived in Texas briefly,
mm-hmm.
And then otherwise, then here.
Yeah.
And it was the job that brought me here. Our closest family is, we have one aunt in Tampa, otherwise my sister and brother-in-law are in North Carolina. So we're really, I came here for the job and no regrets.
Right, yeah, yeah. I came here for the job years ago, back in 2002 as well. So, yeah, and here we are.
Here we are.
Well, Josh, I really appreciate the time to take out of your day and for us to be able to share what Aging Matters does. And I hope that we can talk again sometime.
Absolutely. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
My pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed this episode and my interview with Josh. Feel free to leave us feedback, as we're a new podcast and I'd like to know what my listeners are interested in having us discuss as we continue these episodes. As always, we'll be including links to the resources and services mentioned in our interview on the firm's website, slonimlaw.com. Thanks also to Barbara Van, my media guru. Music provided by 50 Sounds. Until next time, I'm David Slonim, and this is Sonnet 73.